Tonight, we present the life story of one of the great women of English letters. As a novelist, she was the greatest of her time. As a woman, she was all the women she wrote about so eloquently. Maggie Tulliver in Mill on the Floss, Romola, Diana Morris in Adam Bede. And yet, while the whole world acclaimed George Eliot, they forgot Mary Ann Evans, Eliot's true name. So tonight, White Fires, written by John Spott, presents her life story, starring Noreen Tuttle as George Eliot and Ted Osborne as George Henry Lew. It is the year 1850. Following the death of her dearly beloved father, Mary Ann Evans, age 21, leaves her home at Rose Hill to come to London. There she seeks out John Chapman, publisher of the Westminster Review. We find Chapman in one of his finest tempers.
What? It's press time, and you mean to tell me, Mackay, that Thomas Carlyle's manuscript is not in?
Evidently not, sir.
You fool. You idiot. You. Why didn't you tell me?
Is this the office of the Westminster Review?
Is it? Suppose you tell me. I'm beginning to wonder what it is.
Oh, then I must be in the wrong place. Thank you.
Wait a minute. This is the Westminster Review, and if you're trying to sell me a story on the rights of women, I'm not interested.
Oh, but I don't want to sell you any stories. I was told that you were renting rooms at your boarding house.
You mean you'd like to take a room?
Yes.
Well, that's different. How did you happen to know about my place?
I had written you. Here is your letter.
Oh. Then you're Mary Ann Evans.
Yes, sir. You printed my essay on Gough.
Come in here. Here. Sit down at this desk. Carlyle was to have written an essay on the progress of the intellect. Now, there's a quill and paper, and you're going to write it.
I can't.
You will, just the same. Not until you write that essay. Mackay, where are you?
I'm right here, sir.
Oh, so you are. Where's the young lady?
Asleep in the chair, sir.
Why, you idiot! I step out for a moment to refresh myself with a glass of ale, waiting for an essay to fill the last few pages, and you who aspire to be a great writer, nay, a great editor, what do? You let her fall asleep in the chair.
But she worked most of the night, sir.
She did? Where's the manuscript?
But I sent the entire layout to the princess. You fool.
Idiot! You sent the essay of an amateur writer to press without my seeing it? You'll be the laughingstock of London. You're fired.
Yes.
What's this?
It's one of the discarded sheets of her essay on the progress of intellect.
Mackay? I knew it. She's got a great talent. I knew it. My judgment was right. Where is she?
Oh, I told you, sir. In there sleeping. And that reminds me, sir. Since I'm fired, might I have my week's wages?
Fired? What are you talking about? Nonsense. Why, you have the making of one of the finest men of letters.
But then, I'm not fired?
Why, you're my right arm, my right eye. I couldn't do without you. I must talk to this girl. Go get yourself a bracer and come back. Now, young lady.
Oh, yes.
You've got a great talent. You're just the person I've been looking for. I have a project in mind. I've given it a good deal of thought. It's going to be a catalogue raisonné of philosophic literature. Of course, much of my own writings will go into it. The first essential, though, is to issue a good prospectus. I want you to compile it.
Do you mind if I sleep sitting up?
Not at all. Miss Evans.
Good morning, Mr. Chapman.
What's that?
Oh, Mr. Thomas Carlyle dropped in. Said he couldn't find time to contribute anything for the review, but left some of Mr. Browning's poetry. Thought you'd like it.
Ah. Browning writes for the stars. Nobody on this planet understands him.
I was just reading it. I think he writes exceedingly well. Now, this poem here. Be sure that God ne'er dooms to waste the strength he deigns impart. I see my way as birds their trackless way. I shall arrive. What time, what circuit first, I ask not. But unless God send his hail or blinding fireballs, sleet or stifling snow, in some good time, his good time, I shall arrive. He guides me and the birds in his good time.
Good morning, John.
Well, George, it's about time.
Time stays, my friend. We go. A bit of Ronsard to lighten up the morning's gloom. That's what your dowdy old publication needs.
What? Sunshine?
No. More poetry. The sunshine will follow.
This is Miss Evans. Mr. George Henry Lewes.
How do you do,
Miss Evans?
Sit down, George.
Well, thank you.
I believe I mentioned something to you of my prospectus for the publication of a catalogue raisonné.
Yes. Yes, you did.
George, I want you to write an article on modern novelists. I'd suggested Charlotte Bronte, but Miss Evans here disapproved. Therefore, I'm leaving the matter open to you.
It sounds interesting, John.
It is.
The proofs are here.
Good, I'll have a look at them. I have your word, George, and Miss Evans is a witness.
Well, now that Mr. Chapman has settled that matter without my consent, may we have luncheon together, Miss Evans?
An excellent idea.
My inspiration reflects my company, Miss Evans.
Then you should cater more to such inspiring companionship. You wanted to see me, Mr. Chapman?
Yes, Mary. I just received word that George is ill.
Ill? Why, he looked perfectly well in the past few weeks whenever I've seen him.
Well, the doctor's ordered a complete rest.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that about George.
Mm-hmm. You two get along perfectly, eh?
Yes. I think George is a very grand person.
Then that makes what I'm going to ask you to do very much easier. There's a deal of work that he's taken upon himself to do for me. I wonder if you would assist him in its completion.
I would be glad to.
I should beg forgiveness for the expression assist. Probably it will devolve entirely upon you.
When do you want me to begin?
As soon as possible. He's staying for the while in Hampshire.
I shall leave for Hampshire immediately.
Enough of this dry rot for today.
Let's put it aside. But nevertheless, you seem to thrive on it. You're looking much better.
It's the uplifting environment. Mary Evans, to be exact.
Mm-hmm.
Here, I want you to read me a bit of this fellow. He continues to intrigue me.
Robert Browning? I've had occasion to read a great deal of him lately.
Either he's mad or a genius, or both.
Love Among the Ruins. That is an odd title.
Just like Browning to ensnare you to read him by tagging on such a provocative title. Where the quiet colored end of evening smiles miles and miles on the solitary pastures where our sheep half asleep tinkle homeward through the twilight. Stray or stop as they crop. was the site once of a city great and gay, so they say, of our country's very capital. Its prince, ages since, held his court in, gathered councils, wielding power, peace, or war. And I know, while thus the quiet colored eve smiles to leave to their folding all our many tinkling fleece in such peace, and the slopes and rills in undistinguished gray melt away, that a girl with eager eyes and yellow hair waits me there in the turret, whence the charioteers caught soul for the goal, when the king looked where she looks now, breathless, dumb, till I come. But he looked upon the city, every side, far and wide, all the mountains topped with temples, all the glades, colonnades, all the causeys, bridges, aqueducts, and then all the men. When I do come, she will speak not. She will stand, either hand on my shoulder, give her eyes the first embrace of my face. Ere we rush, ere we extinguish sight and speech, each on each. In 1 year, they sent a million fighters forth, south and north, and they built their guards a brazen pillar high as the sky, yet reserved 1,000 chariots in full force, gold, of course. Oh, heart, oh, blood that freezes, blood that burns, earth returns for whole centuries of folly, noise, and sin. Shut them in with their triumphs and their glories and the rest. Love is best.
Love is best. What a fierce lover he must be.
At first, he was a great poet.
Someday I shall write poetry.
Why wait?
Well, I mean, someday I shall try to write poetry. I can remember not so long ago writing a poem about my brother Isaac and myself. My doll seemed lifeless, and no girlish toy had any reason when my brother came. I knelt with him at marbles, marked his sling, cut the ringed stem and made the apple drop.
You were pretty much alone in Warwickshire, weren't you?
Oh, yes. There were only my brother Isaac and myself and father. It was a lovely place. I've always thought of a story about Warwickshire. A story about two people like Isaac and me. Only I would call her Maggie Tulliver and the boy Tom Tulliver. Now, Maggie would be affectionate, impulsive, and a passionate girl, devoted to her brother Tom, who was much less clever at books than she, though he would always lord it over because he was the elder one, the man. And they would live in their big home at the mill.
You know, Mary, you should write just what you've been telling.
Do you think anyone would care to read such a tale?
If you write it, as you just started to tell it to me, it would be read in every household in England.
Oh, well, someday I shall try my hand at it.
Most books are never written because they are put aside for that someday. Make it today, tomorrow, in a week, but definitely one day.
Very well. I shall, George. I shall before another sun rises.
What's the matter, Mary? You're crying. What's happened?
Poor Amos. They had to drag him from Millie's bedside.
What in the world are you talking about?
About Amos Barton.
And who is Amos Barton?
He's the hero of my story.
Oh. I thought there had been a death in your family.
There has. Millie. Little Millie just died.
But you have no relations named Millie, have you?
No. But she's the heroine in the story.
Oh, I see. Here, let me read it.
No, I'll read it to you. Mrs. Hackett arrived at the house in a short while. She was standing in the sitting room when she heard the sound of heavy, slow footsteps in the passage. And presently Amos Barton entered with dry, despairing eyes, haggard and unshaven. He expected to find the sitting room as he had left it, with nothing to meet his eyes but Millie's workbasket in the corner of the sofa, and the children's toys overturned in the bow window. But when he saw Mrs. Hackett come forward toward him, with answering sorrow in her face. The pent-up fountain of tears was opened. He threw himself on the sofa, hid his face, and sobbed aloud.
Oh, the poor thing. Oh, but look here. We must send it off immediately to John Blackwood.
You mean the Blackwood magazine?
Yes.
Blackwood magazine. Oh, no. They will be sure to stop at A's, and I don't like names with A's, B's, C's, D's. Wait, I have it. Mm-hmm. Elliot. That's a nice mouthful. George Elliot.
Good enough. Now, what is the title of your story? You mentioned something about a mill?
Oh, no. I've changed my mind about that story. I'm going to write that later. The title of this one, I thought, would be, The Sad Fortune of the Reverend Amos Barton.
That gives me an idea. I'll write John Blackwood that this friend of mine, George Eliot, is writing a series of short stories under the title of what?
Oh, well, I had thought Scenes of Clerical Life.
Good enough. Give me that quill, will you? Thanks. Now, let me see. Blackwood Magazine, Edinburgh, Scotland. Dear John, I am enclosing a story written by a friend of mine.
Miss Burns, write to George Lewes and ask him please to communicate with George Eliot and have him send as many stories as possible before the next edition of Blackwood. Why, the author is the most authentic voice of our decade.
I am told that George Eliot was a clergyman over at Heath.
Now remember, dear, not one word about who George Eliot really is.
You'll have me hanged yet.
If that Amos Barton character isn't the curate at the Shepperton Church, I'll give 3 loads of hay to the poor farm.
Sure enough, that's Mr. Merrill, curate at Chilvers Coton. Why, it even says the old church had an outer coat of rough stucco, red tile roof, and Well, anyway, surely it's a stupid old man like Mr. Merrill.
No man wrote those descriptions of Millie. I believe George Eliot to be a woman, for if they originate with no women, I believe that no man ever before had the art of making himself mentally so like a woman since the world began.
You're wrong, Dickens. I think Eliot is a middle-aged man with a fine wife. That's where he gets those feminine touches.
Write George Lewes and inform him that I'll never forgive him unless he tells me who this George Eliot person is. Why, I've been besieged by 1,000,000 letters and visits.
Well, you're famous, though nobody would recognize you for it as George Eliot.
I'm still Mary Ann Evans.
Ah, Mary Ann. That Dinah of yours is a creation, a superb creature.
It seems that the story of Dinah Morris is the story of Mary Ann Evans.
In that they both seek the same thing, eh?
In that they both seek love. That is, affection.
Love is the more honest expression.
Yes, it is. And for that reason, so often avoided.
Mary, surely you know of my feelings for you and of the conditions that prevent my speaking them openly to you. There's something wrong with a nation's laws that allows a woman to run off with another man and still prevents the innocent party from freeing himself. That is my story. There's nothing I can do about it. But believe me, Mary, I love and worship you. Would be lost, completely lost without you. Small consolation, I know. Words are ever small against the torrential deluge of feeling.
Forgive me for forcing you to say all that, George, dear. That is all I wanted to know. And though well I knew it, the woman in me demanded to hear it.
I should have known you'd do just that. For I have read much about Dinah Morris.
Miss Byrne.
Yes, Mr. Blackwood.
Send George Eliot a statement telling him that an 800-pound advance is being mailed to him on the receipt of his book, Adam Bede. And postscript, please send a photograph of him.
To my mind, George Eliot's new book, Silas Marner, is by far his best.
Yes? What is it, Mr. Blackwood?
Write Mr. Eliot and tell him I'm taking the liberty of changing the title of his book, The Tullivers, to The Mill on the Floss. And postscript, please send a photograph of himself. Underline, please.
He proves he is a real stud.
You continue to astound me, Mary. This poem is exquisite. This is life to come, which martyred men have made more glorious for us who strive to follow. May I reach that purest heaven, be to other souls the cup of strength in some great agony, enkindle generous ardor, feed pure love, beget smiles that have no cruelty, be the sweet presence of a good diffused, and in diffusion more intense, so shall I join the choir invisible, where music is the gladness of the world.
Oh, I'm glad you liked it, dear. I think I would rather have been a poet than anything else.
Never forget, my dear, that meter and rhyme alone do not attest the point. In all you write, there is poetry, great passages of it.
How can I fail to live each moment so joyously when I have someone like you about?
I only wish it could go on being that way.
Why do you say that?
The doctor tells me that there's something amiss inside this old battered carcass of mine.
Has it been those same terrible pains, George?
Yes, the same. And a few more. But don't forget that worry never helped any kid. I'll be at your place later. And until then, just remember, I love you. I'll see you tonight, my dear. I'm supposed to be at Miss Evans this evening, and here I lie helpless. What's wrong with me?
I don't know.
Well, I do. It's death. But I'm waiting for someone. She won't fail me. I can't go until then.
Oh, come now, it's not that serious, Mr. Lewis.
How would you know, Doctor? You admitted it wasn't in the medical books. That must be she. Hurry, open the door, please.
George. George, darling. What is it?
It's nothing. Now that you're here.
What is it, Doctor?
Mr. Lewis knows as much as I do. Good night, madame.
Don't waste your time on the clinical aspects, my dear. Tell me. Tell me what you did this afternoon.
Oh, George, darling. You mustn't talk. You must rest. You've got to get well.
No, my dear. This is where our roads separate. Find the left and die. Yours to the right and light.
Oh, no. No, don't say that. Don't.
It's been a good life. I have no regrets. I have a memory of all things glorious. What more do I want?
To live, George, darling. To live.
No, dear. Though it's not in the medical books. I know I'm going. Ask the doctor. And so I can proceed on my road without feeling that I missed anything. Oh, but I shall, my dear. I'll miss you every step of the way. Beyond the end of all roads. But who knows? Maybe somewhere beyond this vision, our roads will meet. And so I go. Waiting.
Darling. George. George, George. What is it?
I'd like to see Mr. George Eliot.
Who is calling?
Tell him John Blackwood.
I'm George Eliot.
Oh, now, madame, please. I have come all the way from Edinburgh. I can't waste any time. Will you please tell him I'm here?
I don't know how to prove to you that I'm George Eliot, save by these letters and receipts. Here. Look at them.
Well, this is the... You're not fooling me, are you? I've never seen George Eliot, so I couldn't know.
You can rest assured I am not fooling. Now, please sit down and tell me what it is you want, Mr. Blackwood.
Well, this is the oddest thing that's ever happened to me.
If you've come to speak about the proofs of my last book, Daniel Deronda, they're all corrected. Here they are.
Hmm? Oh, yes, yes, by Jove, so they are. Well, this will make a great story.
I'm afraid it won't matter much from now on.
Think of it, Miss...
Evans.
Yes, think of it, Miss Evans. It will lend itself to wonderful publicity.
Well, if you must publicize it, you might add that George Eliot will not write again.
What? Oh, now, please, no, not...
That's final, Mr. Blackwood.
But why? You know very well George Eliot's one of the most successful writers in England today.
George Eliot ceased to exist when George Henry Lewes died. He died. Last night.
And so the startling life story of England's greatest woman novelist ends, for never again did she write for publication. And to George Henry Lewes, the world owes a debt of gratitude for igniting a spark that flamed into one of the great white fires of inspiration. She died 2 years later, and somewhere on that road that leads beyond, they may have met and walked and talked again of the people of her storybook world who became immortal. Tonight's program was written by John Slott, musical score and direction by Wilbur Hatch. These tales of the white fires of inspiration are under the direction of Ralph Scott and come to you from Columbia Square in Hollywood. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
KNX Los Angeles.